Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 89. This week we're joined by two friends and fans, David Goldstein, who's at DaveG924 on Twitter. It's his first time on. Thanks, David, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, gents.
And Josh, who's at Nola Socks, and this is Josh's. I don't even know what time. You've been on a lot. Thanks, Josh. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me back.
So we have something terribly unique tonight. We have five white dads talking about fish, which is
hard to round up this group. Yeah.
I don't know if this has ever happened before on internet radio, but we're going to get into a discussion about Big Boat, which came out a few days ago. But first, Jonathan, what's new in the fish world? What are any news or announcements we need to chat about?
Well, we had the New Year's announcement, I think, since the last, like, immediately after we recorded the last episode, they announced the New Year's MSG, which you guys are all going to go to, right? Four nights, Madison Square Garden, New Year's Eve. No? Yes? Maybe?
Definitely
David?
At least two, probably three.
Yeah, you're up there in New York, right? So
yes.
Makes sense.
I'm going to try to get to a show or two, but I don't know.
Fair enough.
I'm going to have two infants at that time, so I'm just pretending that it's not even happening.
That's what couch tour is all about, dude.
It's true. It'll be serious couch tour.
It's having infants.
That is what couch tour is. It's why couch tour was made.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to come by you, RJ, and then I'll see the infants, and then I'm going to go to New York with one of the infants.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome. That'd be sweet if you kidnapped one of our babies.
No, it wouldn't be. I would take it to the first fish show. It'd be sweet.
That's a good idea. Former guest, Alan Paul, did a couple interviews with one with Trey and one with Paige, I think, separately, right? And then wrote a couple interviews or wrote a couple pieces that ran in the Wall Street Journal and some news nuggets in there.
Yeah, there was some good stuff. Mostly it was talk about the album and whatnot, but one little tidbit is Trey referenced that they were rehearsing an album for Halloween. So not that anybody really doubted it, but now we have some confirmation that they're going to be doing something cool for Halloween. Anybody got any hot picks for that? Or
I'm going to put the smart money on a Bowie record, which seems kind of cliche, but they could have a lot of fun with that.
So, oh, yeah.
I think I'd enjoy that very much.
I think because Jonathan loves it so much, they're going to cover the brand new Bon Iver album.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wow.
Josh, that's what you thought you were coming on to discuss today, right?
This isn't the Bon Iver friendly podcast.
They cover Yola Tango's I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One front to back with several 10-minute jams in between. That would just cause that'd make my brain explode. So maybe that's not such a good thing for that to happen. One can dream.
I'd love to see them do Yola Tango. More dad rock.
Well, yeah, I'd be all for it.
It's too hard, man. Remember, ever since they did was that 2009 when they did the rotating albums? And they were like, did they start with 100?
And something like that.
They were all like, they all seemed legit. And then everyone, like, I mean, it was just, it's too hard. It's too hard. Like Jonathan said, it's a good way to be wrong, but I'm not even guessing because I have no idea what direction they're going to go. I feel like they got
that thing. That was in Halloween where they had the board and they kept killing off the albums.
Yes, yeah, before Fest 8 or whatever.
Right, they would kill them one by one, like the Von Femmes record got killed and then exile.
That was pretty good for 2009 internet, actually. You know,
I was thinking that.
Good graphics and whatnot. Anyway, so Fish is going to play in Vegas for Halloween. Jonathan and Brad are going to be there. The rest of us aren't, I don't think. Are you going, David?
No, I'm definitely going to be watching it at home, but especially that's on a Monday night. I'll do couch tour for all those and I'll have a good time, but my daughter just turned 2, so for me to go out to Vegas on a Sunday would be that'd be grounds for divorce. Mm-hmm. So
right on. are you David or Josh, are you guys catching any other fall shows?
I am not, just because they're in the South. The Southeast and the South, and the tour's pretty short. I'll catch on TV what I can, do some Mixler, but no. If Nashville had been on a weekend, I'd like to go to that just because Nashville has a lot of intangibles.
Same with David. I'm not catching any fall shows. And just as David said, if they were playing Nashville for two nights on a weekend, my wife and I were going to make a weekend out of it. But since it's like a Monday and Tuesday or Tuesday and Wednesday, that's a no-go.
Right on.
Yeah, it's kind of tough.
Well, we will all be paying close attention. Our quick hits will be back. We're going to do reviews right after each night. And if people who are listening want to help, obviously shoot us a note, let us know. Love to have you participate. We'll have these guys from Vegas. I'll do the Atlanta ones, and anyone who is interested can hop on for any of the other shows, or in addition to us on those. Cool. And so there's something about a million nights in a row at MSG and not going to Europe, which is sad, but also kind of awesome. Is that the latest rumor?
Yeah, I think that's another thing to kind of, that rumor of the MSG at like a dozen nights or 13 nights at MSG, which I assume would be 2 weeks with one night off in the middle, has been going around. And then in that Alan Paul interview, Trey kind of alluded to some, quote, slowing down. And I don't think he just means slow llamas.
different things.
So, yeah, and different kind of look to the touring. So maybe that really is going to happen. I would hope they're going to do that at MSG and to do that somewhere out west and maybe somewhere.
So I saw that they said like maybe late July, early August, and then that would be great because maybe they'd still go to Europe in the spring. That's positive thinking, right?
I hope so. That sounds amazing. I don't know if it's happening, though, Brad.
As a resident of New York City, I wouldn't have much problem with it. I mean, obviously, I couldn't go to all 13. I could pick and choose, but that's what the Dead did for a while. They would do these 8-night MSG runs, then go out to the West Coast. Or, if they were going to go that route, it'd be nice if they had, like, one night would be a horn night. You know, they could have certain themes. Or
I'd love to see them mix it up, like, they're touring and just do something different than a month and a half or month-long summer tour followed by a 2 or 3 week-long spring tour or fall tour plus MSG, for New Year's Eve. You know, they've been basically kind of following the same pattern ever since coming back in 2009. Obviously, there are a few falls where they just haven't toured. I'm all for them just mixing it up and doing a long run at MSG or somewhere else. I don't know. Why not?
A lot to be said for doing that. You know, you imagine they'd be rested, sleeping in familiar beds, if not their own bed. You know, Trey lives in Manhattan now, and they've all got places or a place, I'm sure, that they could be comfortable. And without the traveling element, they'd be relaxed, probably be able to rehearse in the afternoon and then go down and play a show. And I think the result would probably be pretty great, particularly for the second half of the run.
Got a couch and an air bed. Any of you guys are just welcome to crash. Just give me advance notice.
I'll be right over.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you. Cool. So we'll all be crashing at David's for the MSG run. And whoever's listening, obviously, is welcome to,
How do you know if, like, Deadheads have stayed at your house? Answer, they're still there.
Still there.
Guys, we're going to get into some discussion of the new album that was just released. We're going to kind of mix in some music along the way as we talk. We just, last week, if people didn't notice, we started fading in some music as we discussed it. And we might do the same here for some of the tracks we talk about. I don't know, Josh, not to put you on the spot, but do you want to kick us off with sort of overall takeaways and get the discussion going from there?
I think it's fine. My opinion of recent Phish albums, and by recent I really mean going back to the late 90s, is that they're all good. None of them have been terrible in my mind. The way I basically approach new Phish albums is I really will listen to them a lot when they're released. I think I've listened to Big Boat a dozen or so times already all the way through. But then what happens to me in new Phish albums is after I give the album a dozen or even two dozen listens, then I stop. And invariably, I never return to the album again. And I think this is just another one of those albums to me. There are songs that I really enjoy. Home, I think is awesome. I love the kind of outro jam at the end, and I'm kind of hoping that turns into a centerpiece of some second set. I think Running Out of Time is just interesting. It's very different from a lot of Phish, studio or otherwise, that we've heard. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing where that goes live. And I Miss You is a very sad song, but I really like it. I love the nice Trey solo at the end. But a lot of it to me, and again, this is just my view, I'm not a music critic, but it's largely forgettable. You know, the songs, I like the songs. I like the songs live. But the studio versions just kind of leave me wanting.
David, what about you? What's your sort of big picture takeaway?
It took me about 3 or 4 listens to really get into it, but I'm largely positive. I'm pretty pro. I mean, one of the things I really look for in records, especially when Fish going into the studio, is simply, how does the album sound? And I think that Big Boat, in terms of overall production values, is their best sounding album since Farmhouse, which I think Bryce Goggin produced. That was when Trey was really into Pavement, like the late 90s, early 2000s. There's a lot of ear candy on Big Boat. It's incredibly well mixed. The levels are very good. And on good headphones, you can hear lots of nifty things in the background, especially in a song like Petrichor. There's a lot of layers. I think the horn arrangements, songs like No Man or No Man's Land, and especially Tide Turns, are fantastic. And I think it holds together surprisingly well. It's a little longer than Fuego was. I like that it's 13 songs. It has a good flow. And, you know, I mean, certainly they kind of aim for more of like an emotional resonance than in the past. And I think they carry it off. And I'm relatively surprised at how much I've been listening to it and how much I enjoy it, simply because it sounds so good. I mean, Ezrin, for things that he may or may not have done in the studio, knows how to make a record. He knows what he wants it to sound like. And in addition to the songs themselves, I just think it's very pleasurable to listen to, which is what I want from a Fish studio record in this day and age.
Right on.
So, David, can I ask a question?
Shoot.
Like, is it an album? Do you like it as a Fish album, or do you like it as an album? Like, you listen to a lot of studio music, right?
Right.
Is this good for a Fish album, or is this a really good album that you're going to listen to for years to come?
I'd say album, because I find with the advent of Spotify and streaming, my attention span is shorter than it has ever been. And for me to have gotten through Big Boat about 10 or 12 times through makes me say that, all right, this is something I'm actually going to enjoy. I'm going to listen to it with other non-Fish albums. And it actually makes you want to go out and buy the vinyl, so long as they can assure me that it's not going to skip like my Fuego vinyl skips. They should be proud of it. I think it's a very good album.
Josh, I think I guess I'm maybe closer to you in that I listen to them a bunch, but it's sort of like a vehicle for understanding the songs that I know I'm going to hear live later. Once this came out, I actually went back and we listened to a bunch of albums over the past few days, older Fish albums, and I realized that I hadn't listened to them in maybe since they came out. So I guess maybe, I don't know, I might be in the minority there. I just don't really listen to Fish albums besides Rift, really, ever.
The two that I listen to are Rift and Billy Breathes. To me, Billy Breathes is the one, and Rift, I put it a little bit behind Billy Breathes, but Billy Breathes to me is the one Fish album that I listen to because I like it as an album up against some of my favorite bands' studio work. I think it works as an album. I think all of the songs flow well together. I think, you know, I know you guys had tweeted out a question, what's your favorite Fish studio song? The song Billy Breathes to me is just Fish doing exactly what I, you know, and this is just my personal preference, but what I want to see Fish do in the studio, which is take the song and do something in the studio that I can't hear live, and, you know, do something interesting with it, play around with the studio. You know, if you kind of listen to Billy Breathes after about the 2-minute mark, you get the banjo coming in and kind of this, you know, horn sounds. It's just something that you don't hear live. And then you kind of have that whole second, you know, the second really half of Billy Breathes is almost this complete suite of music. And it's just that to me holds up as a studio album and something that's compelling to me. Most of Fish's other studio work, I just don't get that feel for.
I think you could make a case for this record as being very largely rooted in studio work. It's not, let's do what we do on stage. You know, they got horn arrangements. They've got things people do, which is really just a demo. And you're never going to hear it like that on stage. I'm really interested, actually, to hear. Apparently, they recorded a bunch of different versions of that before they just settled on playing the demo. But David, you're right. I agree with your assessment about the work that Ezrin's done and they've done with him, and you know, utilizing the studio and making a good sounding record. A lot of people, you know, throw around the word auto-tune, and I'm not sure that I don't agree. It's not, I'm not hearing auto-tune. I'm hearing a lot of double track vocals from Trey, you know, where you record the vocal, then you record it again and you layer them to kind of get a richer sound. I'm hearing that on a bunch of the songs, and I think it sounds good. And Trey's also singing better than ever. And I think he spent a lot of time working on that, which you can't do live, you know.
Just about the singing, I mean, there's no way that Trey can pull off something like Tide Turn, say 1997 or 1998. I mean, it's really between Tide Turns and I guess Even Miss You, it sounds like he enjoys singing, he's trying to sing. And while we all know that no one has listened to jam bands for the vocals, given that, I think he's come a long way. And just to the point of like studio craft, I mean, I'd say between this record and Fuego, the horn arrangements really make it pop, and this one even more so. I mean, when I first heard Tide Turns, I don't know if they broke it out at one of the early shows, maybe Portland or whatnot, I said, all right, they better put some horns on this in the studio, because if they make it, they can have a really good, solid R&B track.
I think we talked about that very thing on Twitter, because that was my first thought as well. It's like there's definitely room for horns in this, and they were leaving just almost too much space in the live arrangement, because which didn't really help the live arrangement. But you could tell there's going to be horns punching right there. Horns should get right there.
Maybe just because I've listened to it so much, but it's so distinctive to me. Trey's horns generally are the same upbeat, nice, you know, rhythm or whatever.
He does put together some, I don't know how complex the charts is, or if it's more about there's room for the skilled horn players to kind of flesh it out with a little improvisational or something. I don't know. But the result really adds up. And you're right. It is kind of a Trey sound. You hear some of the same stuff in Tab, and it's good stuff to hear.
Mm. Jonathan, I think you said Breath and Burning sounds like Drifting to you. Right?
Yeah, I mean, just a little, you know, there's, and it could just be in my brain.
I wouldn't have ever thought about it, but listening back to it, okay, I get it. It's nice, man. I really like that song. And I guess I like it because I also like Trey Band a lot.
I'm glad you brought that up, Brad. We should tell everyone that Jonathan wrote a good review of the album on his personal blog, which is not the same as the HF Pod blog that, you know, we're mixing things up. It's on roadjimmy.net, right?
That's it. Roadjimmy.net.
We're still working on we're working with Road Jimmy's people to get his website on our website.
It's going
to
be hard, man. He's just a lot of lawyers.
There's a lot of contracts and, you know, yeah, there's stuff, man.
There's like a lot of stuff, but we'll
get out of my DMs, bro.
We'll get through it. So it's interesting, the reviews that I've seen from the lamestream media, music media, are not great. The Pitchfork thing, I mean, I understand that they do what they do, and they've been doing what they've been doing for a really long time.
No, I think with Pitchfork, with the whole recent, the Day of the Dead compilation that the National helped spearhead with all those indie musicians, and then God, like Bob Weir's record was reviewed, so now that they're considering the Dead to be cool, they're like, okay,
that's it, right?
Let's review a Fish record.
When the Dead wasn't cool, that's what, maybe they just didn't know about it. I mean, Dead's always been fucking amazing, right?
Yeah.
But like, review, the guy, he compared like Blaze On, he's saying like, you know, this is a good Latter-day Fish song. It's not as good as So Many Roads. Like, what are you talking about?
These are very different things.
To the Dead.
They come together. They're still very different things.
Well, but doesn't it get back to like a fundamental sort of, I don't know, misalignment between the like indie rock and the jam scene? You know, like jam bands are taboo until they become cool. Like maybe if the Shins like come back and cover Billy Breeze, then like Pitchfork will be like, sweet, man. Fish is actually awesome.
Tickets are hard enough already. We don't need Pitchfork or Time Magazine or whatever to review Fish albums well. Fish doesn't need him to review them
well.
But
look, this is also...
I like a Fish record.
I think this goes to Josh's point that, like, there's no one thinks there's been, like, an outstanding Fish studio album, so these guys think they can't make, like, records, bro. You know?
What was funny about the Pitchfork review is, like, if you're going to review a Fish album, give it a 1. Like, on Pitchfork, you're giving it, like, a 5.3, which is, like, yeah, it's kind of
after
a, not a bad
after they shat on it. They shat on it, like, 5.3.
Yeah, like, shit on it, and, like, you know, make a funny review. You know what I mean? Like, entertain me about how bad this album is, and then give it a 2 or something. But just kind of a, yeah, it's an okay ladder. It was just a stupid art. It was stupid.
It was really
I don't know why they're wasting their time.
Exactly. That was my question.
I didn't read a couple paragraphs in the whole thing.
You clearly listened to Fish before. Like, I don't think he was going in entirely cold. Like, he had some interesting observations about the concerts and the fan base, and I think he'd mentioned he'd listened to Joy and Fuego, so he wasn't going in entirely cold, but he really didn't like Tide Turns at all. He said it was some sort of nauseating.
I really liked, and he described it in the exact opposite way that I hear it. I want to ask about why Fish bothers to make albums, because, like, what I understand, I guess it's just part of being a musician. You like to get in the studio and see what you can do. But, like, honestly, I mean, I'm not saying that they shouldn't, because I appreciate it when they do. But, like, why bother?
I mean, I think that they do it to mark them. As a musician, it's your job. It's what you get up and do every day. And, I mean, a band like Fish, I think they still believe in the sanctity of albums. Those guys grew up with albums. They grew up with album artists that put out several records. You know, they themselves, they feel, as touring musicians make this career, we want to have an album to mark where we are at this place and time. And I think that they enjoy the challenge. I mean,
you can tell they've been serious about records since 86 when they put the White Tapes out, right? Like, I mean, that was like serious time into that.
Well, you know, in the early days, making records was a whole part of the industry, even though Fish themselves never suffered from pressure from their label. Elektra was, you know, very relatively cool insofar as labels go and, you know, let them just kind of work on their thing. But they wanted to make albums, and they worked really hard at them. And it didn't stick with the lame stream, as you put it, RJ. But, you know, but it stuck with somebody.
You should hashtag that.
You know, and the copyright that, and the as David said quite astutely, I think, is that they grew up, they're album people. They grew up listening to albums. The 80s, when they became a band, was still the album era. The 90s was even early 90s was still an album era. And it's really only now when a lot of artists can get by without bothering to make an album. But that's still who they are. They write songs, they put them together, and, you know, they're a different thing. This is
the thing,
kind
of goes
to what we're talking about.
I have a question about is how much album making has changed since when, I don't know, in 86 when they had to be in a studio and lay down some tracks as opposed to now when they've made it all over the country, right?
But they're still in studios, except for...
not so much together every time, you know?
Recording by occasional flying in and recording has been around for a while. So, I mean, the Dead did it with, what was it, Built to Last? You know, they were hardly anybody in the studio at the same time. And it kind of worked.
I'm not saying anything bad about it. I'm just saying it's a totally different scenario and situation, right? Life.
I think
life
for this producer. One, I think they recorded it, what, they did it in New York. They did it at Ezrin Studios in Nashville, and they also did some at the Barn. But I'm pretty sure that they were all in the same place at the same time.
I think they did some Muscle Shoals stuff to get some of the horns as well.
Maybe some overdubs, but
yeah.
So guys, we should let's just get into some of the details here. I mean, I'm sure that most of our
because right now it's just been like kind of like, you know, not detailed.
No, I just I asked like a dumb question and got a good answers, and now we can talk about Fish again. Josh, start with you. What are some of the standouts? Like, what do you keep going back to? What do you find yourself re-listening to on the album in particular?
I like Home.
Billy Breeze.
You can say nothing else. You could say, no, I like Home.
Home.
That's it. No, I like Home. I hear what everybody is saying about Tide Turns, And I had actually tweeted a couple weeks ago that, like, why even record this song? It's so lightweight and just nothing. And I understand, like, I get that. I mean, the horns are arranged beautifully. It sounds great. But, like, if I want to hear that type of song, I don't need to hear it from Phish. I just don't. You know, like, there are bands who do this a lot better than Phish, and I don't need to hear Phish's, you know, kind of derivative soul music.
Okay, so I'm gonna rebut that just slightly, and you're obviously entitled to that opinion, and it's not entirely wrong. Like, yeah, we're listening to Phish, but if they're feeling it, if you write it as a songwriter, you might want to play it. And the only thing I could say that would, you know, that I would like to hear differently on this track, and there's one other on the album, is that maybe they should have gone with someone other than Ezrin to produce it. If you want to play a soul track in, what year is this, 2016? Go down to Daptone Records, get the Dap King horns, and make a soul record. And if Phish had done that, we'd be having a different conversation. Just for that song, and like No Men in No Man's Land, which also comes off well on the record, that would have been a 45 I would have stood in line to buy.
And Jonathan, I think you're spot on. I mean, when I was saying, like, if I want to hear kind of, you know, new bands playing soul music, I'll listen to Sharon Jones, or I'll listen to, you know, any other band that's on, you know, Daptone Records. Like, that to me is much more compelling than, you know, hearing Trey and Phish sing a soul tune. Had they gone and got the, you know, the Daptone horns, sure, that it probably would have been better. But it's still Phish playing a soul song.
Can we hold on? Talk about the fact that he's like the whitest, gingeriest guy around, and he's like making songs that sound like that? I mean, come on, that's right. Fucking great. He's fucking crazy. He's like an alien, I think.
And you can say everything that I'm saying is kind of hypocritical because all of Phish's music is derivative. So I mean, everything that they play, they're basically borrowing and stealing, you know, sounds and styles from other artists. To me, I don't know, the soul thing doesn't really work with Phish.
I think he tries his hardest at it, and it comes out really well. It could be better, right? Like, we could hear better, but it's so fun to watch him play it, and then we also get maybe like a bow or a reba.
I wouldn't mind hearing Charles Bradley do that song.
Well, I mean, when we talk about the expectations, you know, where these songs show up live is a totally different discussion, but also a legit one, you know? I think, like what you're saying, Brad, which is how I view Phish albums, which is like, cool, I wonder what this will be like live, as opposed to like, I wonder how many times I'll listen to this studio version. But something, I think this is just me being a total sucker for Phish in general. Like, there's so many catchy songs on this album that I can't like stop listening to, and that might subside after, I don't know, a few weeks, but... Just from, I mean, Tide Turns so and Miss
speaking
You.
Of catchy,
and Home.
I've got the cute story. Hold on
more,
for 1 second. Sorry.
More is amazing.
More.
Yeah, I like More.
Was at the sink singing Blazon.
Second set closer.
Second set closer. Yeah, see? Brad, your kids are already, you know. My son's been asking me to play Big Boat like the past couple of days. I'm like, dude, that's think, like, you know.
I
More? After they'll break it out at the end of the second set, and after you've had 3 or 4 beers or whatever your pleasure happens to be, you'll be pumping your fist. You won't mind the cheesy lyrics. There's something more than this!
It's got an anthemic beat. People are going to love it.
Vibrating, vibrating with love and light. It's a great one.
It's got the same 4 chords as Touch of Grey. I mean, it's a good... Yeah. It's kind of like Valentine or any of Trey's daily affirmation songs where he's so into it that on the surface you realize it's kind of cornball. You can't help but, I guess, rally along. So I'm looking forward to hearing that.
For the record, my wife thinks that Home sounds like a Ben Folds song. Every time it comes on, she's like, okay, is this Ben Folds? No, stop. This is the 100th time we listen to it. Every time I tell you, it's Paige.
Oh, I often think that some of Paige's songs sound slightly Ben Folds-esque. I think it's his voice and the piano.
Mm-hmm. And he looks like...
Josh, do you think that Miss You is also... Does that fall in the same category in terms of sort of cheesy pop? That...
No, I mean, to me, Miss You is a Trey ballad with a nice, you know, guitar solo. And again, I think just to kind of backtrack, you know, I have, like, Tide Turns. It's a fine song. I don't mind it live. To me, though, like, when you're going to go in, you know, when I'm talking about, like, studio albums, I don't need to hear Tide Turns, you know, Fish's version of a soul song in the studio. I do like Home. I think a lot of these songs will be good and have been good live. I mean, we haven't talked about Blaze On, the Hold studio on, version man. Of Blaze
twice,
On.
Twice you said, so good. Twice you said, I like Home and pause. Can't think of anything else. I like it.
The Blaze On is great. The No Man, I think, is phenomenal. It's like a great,
fantastic,
terrific on that. Right, that would be the A side of my Fish Deftones single, by the way, with Tide Turns on the flip.
Mm-hmm.
I love Friends. I didn't at first. At first, I was like, "Huh," and then I, you know what? I love it. It gets me pumped.
I didn't believe you at first.
You thought I was joking, and I can see why you would. But I love Friends, and I want to see it live again.
Okay, here's my opinion about Friends. It's like when you listen to the lyrics and you're trying to get into it, you're like, dude, is he really singing about religion? And then he says,
religion and aliens. Hold on,
but then he says they come from outer space, which I'm like, oh, yes, this is the best. Like, you know,
big boat from outer space.
Yeah, dude. Amazing.
You could have said anything, but once you said outer space, I'm in.
Yeah, I thought he was serious, and I'm like, nope, he's talking about outer space.
It's aliens.
I think it's the best, stupidest first song on a Fish album ever.
I'm surprised that it's the title track, but it just shows narrow. How Fish is, you know? Like, who would put that song as the not only the first track, but also, like, the title? I mean,
as Fishman, from the title. Fishman starred in, I mean, maybe Poor Heart? Like, what other studio songs has Fishman starred in?
He's sung a bunch of songs.
Lengthwise.
I know, but come on, let's talk about it.
Fishman studio songs? Are they Lengthwise?
I don't know.
I can't think of it off the top of my head.
There's got to be something.
It has to be there.
There's something on virtually every record. I mean, they at least Ringo and give him one. So, and I don't mean to say they just give him one. Oh, let's let Ringo play one. But I mean, they actually, he brings songs and it comes out.
He wrote Dog Face Boy, but doesn't sing it.
Yeah, Tube. He wrote Tube. He's got a lot of stuff under his belt.
He's got some jams. So,
he's got some jams. Yeah. Leave him
Show
alone,
the respect.
You know?
I like Tube, though.
Tube's pretty good. Good lyrics, really good lyrics.
Featured on Taste.
True. Or The Fog That Surrounds, even more so.
And the original version of Limb by Limb.
The biggest problem with Miss You was their decision to debut it in the first set of the first night of Wrigley Field, because that wasn't a really good spot in which to put a torch song.
Too many drunk Chads?
I give you that.
Yeah, too many drunk Chads, too many people saying I'm at Wrigley Field, let's blow the roof off the joint, and then you get the 7-minute torch song about Trey's sister, which...
Well, see, Trey got out there and he realized there was no roof to blow off, so he could play whatever he wanted.
I would have been like a fucking sobbing fetus in the middle of the field, just crying.
That
would have
been
really
weird to look at.
If I were there.
I think you're going to see the best slot for that. I mean, I could see... like Miss You, Tweezer Reprise Encore, or maybe late.
Yeah, sort of like a Joy
set.
Similar to Joy, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, you know what it is?
Very similar.
It's like a more emotional Winter Queen, maybe? You know, Trey, which is that beautiful solo.
Need to hear Mike's song and to Miss You and to We Could Pogets.
It's going to happen, so buckle up.
All right. It'll be Mike's song, Miss You. Backwards down the number line, the line, and then We Could Hug.
That sounds amazing.
And then I'll be dancing by myself in the front row.
Me and Jonathan.
With RJ and Brad, yes, it's us. We'll be happy.
So real quick, I want to talk about the kind of where this album sits from your guys' perspective. But first, for people who haven't heard the album, I think, Josh, we got your answer, which is Home. But Lightning Round, what's the one track that you'd recommend people check out if they're not going to listen to the whole album? Josh, would that be Home for you?
It would be Home.
Okay. Jonathan?
Called it.
You know, I'd probably send them at No Men and No Man's Land, just because it's a hit.
I'm going to say No Men or No Man's Land, and I'm going to go with the smoking hot take that I think it's their finest studio song since If I Could.
Nice. Whoa. Brad, what about you? Where are you sending people?
You know, I had my mom and my sister listen to Miss You. And you know that I, otherwise I got, you got, if you're trying to sell somebody on the album, you got to go with track number 9, which is No Man.
Damn, busting out the track number. Shit.
Getting a bit of a consensus.
I'm going with you guys. I was thinking about Miss You a lot because I keep singing it to myself, but I think it's just me because I'm a sappy motherfucker. But No Man is
the blaze on into tide turns. I think is just like so great, so nice. Just a great.
What do you guys think about Petrichor before we go?
I really like Petrichor. I think that it it's kind of the lyrics don't burn me up the way Time Turns Elastic lyrics do. Mm-hmm. And the music, I think, is really good. And I really am excited to hear how they do this live as just the, you know, the quartet. I think that's going to be, I'm really not sure how that's going to go, but I'm really excited to hear it.
Do you think they'll play it live?
Trey said they're going to play it live.
Yeah. Oh, he did?
Yeah, Wall Street Journal interview with Alan Paul, he mentions it. So,
wow.
Very excited to hear that. I don't know if I'll be excited after, I mean, because anything's possible, but I think it's kind of cool. I think it's...
You have to have strings, don't you?
That's why I'm curious, because, you know, do some of those parts translate to guitar leads instead of, you know, a lingering violin, or does it, does that segment get shortened, or I don't know, so...
I think I was all geared up for Time Turns Elastic 2. And I was very pleasantly surprised. I think it's very well layered. There's a lot of tasty licks, a lot of ear candy. It's not nearly as cloying as Time Turns Elastic. I mean, right. Almost to me, it feels like Gaiuti is all grown up in a way. Yep. But I was
like the full Gaiuti with the my friend intro and all
right,
of that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised at that. I thought, figured after, oh no, this is one of Trey's things that should have stayed orchestral, but it's actually one of his better attempts at doing like a full band multi-layered suite in a while, and I'm very curious to see how they pull it off. I mean, I'm thinking first set closer. It's got it written all over it.
Nice. I don't know where I read it, but somebody said that Petrichor, one of the great reviews was Petrichor was 13 minutes and 10 minutes too long. And I was like, I feel like it's the other way around.
Rough.
Like, you get rid of the first 3 minutes, like, listen to the last 10.
I compared it in my blog piece that to Adam Hart Mother, and that it's just a big, sweet, it's a big, heavily arranged thing. And but I think it really moves, and it's compelling to me.
Before we wrap up, first of all, Josh mentioned earlier that we do have this survey going of your favorite studio Fish track. I think we should go do another episode where we look in more depth at sort of albums as they stand up to each other. There's
too much content here, man. I think we gotta do another one.
There's 100. We got about 100 votes so far, and like 65 songs were voted for as people's favorites. So it's clearly over the map with only like four or five songs that have 5 votes each, including Divided Sky, Billy Breathes, Ghost. If I Could, and Tide Turns, which might be people trolling us.
Oh,
but Ghost, your best studio song.
Don't 5 dudes rob the Funyun.
5 votes, right? 5 votes for Ghost, the same as If I Could and Billy Breathes and Divided Sky right now. But I'm sure those will change over time. But anyway, just maybe quickly from Josh and David, how do you guys feel like this album so far does stack up? I mean, is it? I guess Josh kind of has already said that it would be something that might be forgotten. But David, what's your take?
I think it's easily their best album of Fish 3.0. Beyond that, it's hard to say, but it seems like the early Fish records, they were devoted to sort of capturing the live sound with a minimal amount of frills. And now that they're older and wiser, they've really came into their own in terms of use of the studio, and it has like a lot of like, I keep going back to the horns and the ear candy, and I think all of that will last. But at least compared to Fuego and I guess Joy, neither of which I listened to ever, this one has me excited to keep listening to it throughout the fall at the least.
Right on. And Josh, I don't mean to put words in your mouth. What's do you want to answer that?
Oh yeah, I would put it solidly in the middle of Fish's studio output. Right. I will probably listen to it two or three more times and then never again.
You're saying that it's a solid middle of the road album?
Solid middle of the road Fish album.
Jonathan and Brad, you guys, before we wrap up, what do you guys think? Do you guys agree with David or Josh, or have a different take on that?
I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's really cool to see that the first three albums, I think, that Fish made, they produced themselves. And then Picture of Nectar started, like, right, the Elektra, I think. Maybe I could be wrong on that. But they were with companies until the last three. And those are all Gent productions, and it's fun. Fun to listen to them come full circle. I think this is exactly what they wanted in a record. I love almost everything about it. Even I don't find myself needing to skip a song in this album. If someone else is in the room or if I'm in the car, like, it's just all really good, I think.
Yeah, I don't skip songs in albums generally, and I definitely haven't with this one. Except to go back and play Friends over again before I go into the rest of the record.
You're the world's greatest Friends.
Yeah, Friends maybe fan. Maybe awesome. The guy, but yeah,
because you're a good friend, you know, good. And you like Friends. That's cool. You're a good friend, you know.
Friends are cool.
Boats in outer space too.
Yeah. Oh well. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. So I really like this record. I don't know. I'm bad at putting something in this when it's this new. I think that over the coming weeks and months, I'll have a much better idea of how I feel about it. But right now, I love this record as much as some of the early ones. And when the newness wears off, maybe I won't. Maybe in 3 months, I'll find I haven't listened to it in two. But I think I'll be coming back to it.
Nice. I think I'm probably more toward Josh, like somewhere solidly in the middle, but I definitely have not been able to stop listening to it, which I guess says something itself. But maybe that just means that we all really like Fish.
What else that I'm excited about is I think I always talk about this, the artwork, like the album cover looks really cool, that that artist's out of China. I think it's like the work is called Don't Touch Me or something, like 12 or so different pieces. It's really cool if we look it up, and I hope they release something with the Fish logo. I got something in during Fuego and the one before, so yeah.
There's a big print supposed to come with everybody who for everybody who pre-ordered of the album art. So
the vinyl,
I think, any pre-order CD or whatever, if you went through the Fish music dry goods today, you'll get that eventually.
Nice. One important note, David said this earlier, but everyone should listen to every album, really, but maybe go back and listen to this one with good headphones. That's a really good piece of advice, because you do hear things that are, you know, when producers, for people who don't know a lot about making albums, I guess, that's when you do hear what different producers and different people can do with music. I think it's a good reminder, because a lot of people just play stuff on their stereo or in their car, and this one deserves probably a closer listen.
Not that there's anything wrong with stereo car. I mean, if you play it really loud, you're going to hear all the stuff too.
Or just play your music super
loud. You have a good
loud.
Playback. Yeah, just play everything really loud. Sorry, Josh, David, you were going to say something.
Or Josh or David. Or
Josh. No, I was going to say, this podcast is also being released on vinyl, right?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. In 6 months.
Yes. Only thing I wanted to mention is that anyone who follows me on Twitter or talks to me for 5 minutes knows I'm a very, very big song of the recent Trey Tom Marshall comp, the song Mercury. And I guess Bob Ezrin cut it from the record, and Trey said it's my favorite song, and he cut it from the record. And I've been trying to figure out where exactly it would have fit on Big Boat. And to Ezra's credit, I kind of can't.
It doesn't fit on the Big Boat record we have, but, you know, right. There were like 30 or 40 songs when they started, so there was easily another 10 songs probably that got some real work before they all got cut. So it probably fit on the record with Shade and, I don't know, Steam, maybe they've revisited again, and you know, those kinds of things.
As long as they keep playing it live, I don't care.
Yes.
But
it's a long album. I mean, 13 songs, you know, I mean, it's nice and long as it is, so I agree. Part of the Halloween rumor is maybe they just have a whole nother album full of songs for us.
I like that rumor.
Well, so we're going to have to wrap it up. Somehow over the course of this podcast, Brad has gone from being in a normally lit room to being in a dark closet where all I can see are his head once in a while when he brings it. You guys are all awesome at drinking beer. Can we just close it by telling people what beer you're drinking currently? Or the last beer you had, if you're not having one right now? Josh?
I'm drinking scotch.
Okay.
Oh, points. Extra fancy. Points.
That is a good well beer.
I just had a Dragoon IPA. It's out of Tucson. It's really delicious.
Nice. David?
My daughter, we threw her a small birthday this afternoon, and I was drinking Two Roads Road to Ruin Double IPA from Stratford, Connecticut. It's very old school, piney, kind of like, sort of like the Warren Haynes of IPAs.
So, I mean, it's everywhere?
Awesome. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's kind of like
especially at festivals.
Sounds delicious. Jonathan, what about you?
I'm drinking Old Busthead Brewing Company's Busthead English Pale Ale. They're a small, kind of new joint out of Fauquier County, Virginia, and it's pretty good.
What?
English Pale Ale.
What? Like
it's
right here?
It's a county. It's like it's between me and Jonathan, sort of. Anyway.
Yeah, it's over there on the way to my parents' house.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Thank you, David, for joining for the first time, and
thanks,
Josh, for coming on again and sharing your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it, guys. And
thanks, guys. Everyone, thanks for putting up with the nonsense.
I hope everyone enjoys it. And we're gonna keep voting on our favorite studio track because we'll keep that going and do something interesting with it eventually. But until then, you know where to reach. Josh is at Nola Socks on Twitter. David's at DaveG924. Jonathan, Brad, and I are kind of all over, but mostly on HF Pod. And we look forward to connecting with you guys soon. Thanks for joining, and keep on rocking.